Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Hulkcast and Aston Villa podcast covering Aston Villa's adventures in the Premier League. I'm James Rushton, joined by Cole Petham and Danny Raza. We're in the wake of Aston Villa's second loss in a row. Guys, Aston Villa lost yesterday 2-1 to Bournemouth in their home opener at Villa Park. Cole, I'll come to you first. How are you feeling after that?
I'm more of a reactionary person, so in the moment, maybe I was a little bit more disheartened, but when you kind of sit back after some time and look at it, it's really not as bad. There's a lot of positives to take. I know there's no points given to us again, but there is a lot of positives. A lot of the stats point in our direction, which, you know what, going into the next game is positive. How do you feel, Danny?
Yeah, I'd say I'm feeling pretty similar. I think the only thing that worries me is that there's so many strong teams in the Premier League that we really need to start getting the points against this kind of opposition. No offense to Bournemouth, but we played so well. Like, I think one of the things that is going to come out when we're analysing this game today is that there's really not an awful lot of criticisms you can make about the overall general play. I think what really is a kick in the teeth is that we pretty much just threw the game away so early on, and I think that's probably why we were all feeling so disheartened. It wasn't like it was over the course of 90 minutes, Bournemouth, fair enough, kind of snuck through. It was genuinely, guys, we this is 3 points dropped. We should have won this game. I think that's the only reason you can feel a little bit disheartened.
Yeah, I think I feel the same. I feel like when you're in the moment, as Cole said, you're quite reactionary. Like when you're at the stadium, everything is the worst possible thing or the best possible thing that's ever happened, because that's the very nature of following football and watching it at the stadium. But when you're at home as well, you are, due to the commentary and how excited they sound and how the match is portrayed, you do get lost in the moment as well, and it's very hard to kind of analyze the match events with any kind of notion, any kind of proper critical evaluation. You kind of get lost in that moment. So I'm glad we've all, you know, had a chance to reflect, and we're probably feeling a bit more realistic. But Cole, do these mistakes need to stop? We'll come into them in detail, but there's been a few in two games so far.
Yeah, for anyone that maybe didn't watch Grealish's post-match comments, I think he said it best, is when you step up to the Premier League, any mistake you make is most likely going to be punished, and that's happened so far. Two mistakes that honestly shouldn't happen. I'll get into them later, but we continue doing this, it's just going to get worse and worse. And unfortunately, looking at it that way, not trying to be a pessimist, but more mistakes just mean more failure. And with that being said, the fan base is just going to get more negative and more negative, which I try to stay away from Twitter after games and even today, because it just honestly gets on my nerves how negative people can be after two games. But no, like, I think people read into certain things too much, and I think it's best said with that. How do you feel, James?
Yeah, it's the same. It's, you know, you feel overly negative at the time. People are very, very, very quick to offer kind of paper thin criticism of some things. There's genuine mistakes, and I'll speak to Danny about this in a second. There's genuinely mistakes you can definitely criticize. But to kind of jump from almost scapegoat to find the weak link and really, really give him a martyr's treatment after a game, it's kind of weak. Two games in, it's 180 minutes of football. We've played two good teams. One of them is full of elite talent with a brilliant manager. One of them have got very decent players with a very thoughtful and adaptive manager in Eddie Howe. So it's always going to be difficult, and the mistakes, they're frustrating, and the negativity is annoying. But I guess it's part and parcel of our expectations. But Danny, the first thing I want to speak about, so it's Villa 2, Villa 1, Bournemouth 2. The first thing that happened, it was seconds into the game, Tom Heaton rushes out and he takes out Callum Wilson. Mistake or not, what are your thoughts here?
No, it was an absolute smack in the face. It was poor goalkeeping from Tom Heaton. Now, Heaton's brilliant. I think he saved us on so many occasions. But he's almost just walked into Wilson, like, to a point where you're thinking, what on earth are you doing? He's taken him out whilst Wilson's kind of basically running towards the corner line. And if Heaton kind of stands his ground, Wilson probably, I mean, he could squeeze across through, but most likely isn't going to find anything from that angle. He just needed to sort of hold his ground there, Heaton. And I just thought I thought it was a very silly penalty to go to give away. And it just, I think, again, it just smelled of basically not being ready into the game. This is a problem, I think, that we've suffered from. I think even during Dean Smith's tenure, but like I think during the last couple of years, we get struck so early, so often. It's very, very common. Now, we can't be chasing games in the Premier League. I think last season in the Championship, we developed a bit of a reputation for being able to come back from losing positions. And that, to me, points to complacency more than anything. Now, I want to ask why that's happening so often, because we will get punished for it more often than not. But yeah, to your original question, absolutely a mistake from here.
Cole, what were your thoughts watching this from home? Because I know you've probably just sat down to watch the match. You know, you're getting all your stuff ready. You've probably got the coffee, the tea, or the snacks in front of you. You sit down, you turn the volume up, you look up, and we've given away a penalty within seconds.
Oh, I don't even understand why he came out of his net. Being at home, you can see replays, and obviously that makes a lot of things better for us, but not the people there like yourself that are at the match. But no, I don't understand why he came out, because if you even look at a replay, Wilson's starting to cut in, but I can't remember who was tracking back one of the defenders. Maybe it was Angles. So he was basically cut off. And the next Bournemouth player was behind another defender, which I think was Mings at the time. So the likelihood of that cross doing anything was... I mean, it's easy to say it now, but most likely it wasn't going anywhere. So I can understand his awareness and his concern to come out, but just the tight angle of it too, I couldn't see it really causing us any problems.
Did you think it was all kind of doom and gloom from there? Because I think the general atmosphere in the stadium was the best possible time to make a mistake seconds in, because there's so much time to, you know, bounce back. And the atmosphere beforehand was quite ferocious. It was probably the loudest, personally, I've sung at Villa Park. The situation almost brought an extra decibel out of you. So the, you know, how it felt conceding that penalty was, right, it's over, we've made the mistake, we can kind of get back into this. I don't know how you guys felt, Danny. Did you feel like that was the best possible time to kind of make such a disastrous error?
Yeah, look, I mean, I thought, fine, we're 1-0 down. There is definitely a way back from this. We just need to compose ourselves. This is something that we're used to. We're always chasing. For whatever reason, we're always chasing. So I was thinking, fine, let's see where this goes. But I think immediately after that goal, we didn't really improve straight away. I think it took us a while to settle in. I think that was really worrying me. Past that point, we were jittery and shaky, much like the second half against Tottenham last week, whereby every time we started moving the ball forward, we'd lose it, either through sort of a silly pass or being pressed too hard and not being able to react to it. Just again, just being a step away from the pace of the Premier League. But definitely at 1-0 down, you're thinking there's still a possibility here.
Well, minutes after that, I think it was probably about 10 or so minutes after, Douglas Luiz, who was making his first start for Aston Villa at defensive midfield, coming in for Conor Hourihan, he was trying to play Aston Villa from the back under a high press. Trezeguet makes a square ball to him, and I think he tries to make this nifty manoeuvre to catch people out, but the only person he catches out is the entire Villa team, because Harry Wilson springs onto it, and the ball's going to nowhere. He's basically made a step over and made a kind of shadow pass to absolutely no one. No one is there except Harry Wilson. He bursts in, he fires a shot. I think it takes a slight deflection off Tyrone Mings, but it matters not, because it crashes in off the post past Tom Heaton, who can't do anything about it. Bournemouth up 2-0 within, 15 minutes? And that's probably even a bigger mistake from Luiz, Cole.
Oh, 100%. Watching that too, it was kind of funny how it played out, because... first of all, I think we've learned a lesson with these two games, is that we need to pay more attention when we're right in front of the box, because that's the second one we give away. The first one was against Spurs and Grealish. But the other thing with this goal that was really weird was that the way it obviously deflected off Mings, and maybe it was just the TV angle, but it looked like it was going wide off the post and would have went out. But the way it's kind of unlucky too, especially the way it bounced off and then just dribbled in. But no, it's another era that needs to be stopped. And you know what? Fair play to Bournemouth pouncing on opportunity or mistakes and opportunities that we're just giving them. Whoever had King and Wilson in their fantasy league is probably doing really well right now. I had King, so I don't know if that was making me a little bit happier than I should have been. But no, it's another mistake, another error, and it's something they need to learn quickly, because at some point, if this continues to happen, we're going to have to change the tone to we're running out of time. Something has to change.
Douglas probably emerged as one of the better performers on the day, and we'll definitely speak about his moment that he shined later on. But Danny, before the match, he was obviously brought into the team for Conor Hourihan. And was that a big surprise for you at all?
No, I thought it was the right decision, absolutely. I haven't got a problem with Hourihan, but I think I genuinely believe he's interchangeable with Mings or Grealish rather than that central defensive midfield role. I think what Dean Smith is doing now is, you know, he's bought these talented players and these signings who are going to be able to advance the team, and I think he's slowly bedding them in. But Luiz is somebody, you know, who can sit back and give Grealish and McGinn the freedom to move further forward. I thought the thought behind that was the best thing to do from Dean Smith's perspective. And I think also we will have seen the way that he played during the game. His passing was on point. Them having somebody who can play from the back just again allows them that freedom to do what they do best.
I think Douglas improved a lot as he went on, and that goal that he scored was it was really something special. I didn't see it happening. It was even probably more impressive than John McGinn's goal, because when that ball's looping down, you have every right to take a volley. Douglas Luiz was probably even a little bit further out, and he just passed it. He stroked it into the back of net from miles out. I was pretty impressed. What were your thoughts, Cole?
Oh, no, I was very impressed. A little bit concerned in the first half, looked a little lightweight, but that seemed to kind of deteriorate with that concern going on. Almost wonder if we have to change that middle three formation a little bit, maybe like two center mids and a cam or something, because with Luiz by himself, I almost wonder if one kind of central defensive midfielder per se is too little, and maybe that's something to look at in terms of the errors, because it seems like that particular player, whether it's Grealish dropping deep or Luiz dropping deep, with that being said, like, what's the error here that's they're not clicking into? Is it simple mistakes, or is there not getting enough support in that position? So I guess I kind of side noted that whole topic with what I said there, but yeah, I thought Luiz did great in the second half. I mean, one hell of a goal for sure.
Just on that, Cole, like I thought, you know, there was nothing really wrong with our particular play. I think one of the problems with Spurs last week, and one of the reasons why it looked like we were a bit lightweight, is that obviously Spurs had so much of the ball. Villa were trying to plan the counter attack, but against Bournemouth, I thought for the most part of that game, it worked well because we were on the front foot and we didn't look defensively sort of in trouble because of just having Luiz in there, did we? I think it was just a case of it was just a case of nerves and jitters. Like, I'm definitely in the school of thought that it was just silly mistakes.
Oh, for sure. Like, no, that's actually like a perfectly valid like reasoning, because I don't know, maybe I'm just nitpicking at the few instances that I would see that it looked like that one central defensive midfielder wasn't enough, and that's just me nitpicking because that's probably who I am. But no, that's a completely valid point. And yeah, let's move on.
I think I want to speak about another defensive midfielder, not Villa's. It's Philip Billing of Bournemouth. Danny, you mentioned him in our preview last episode.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was kind of everywhere and probably Bournemouth's most, well, I'd say the person we feared the most in midfield. Feared for a different reason, though, because he seemed to be kicking lumps out of our players. He was dragging John McGinn down. And there was probably a foul on Jack Grealish, which could have seen him leave the pitch. I mean, I got a text from my mate Dave from Cincinnati, and he's basically my VAR guy, because I'm in the stadium. I need someone who's always watching the matches to tell me what's going on. Because, you know, you just see a player go down. Were they diving? Was it a proper tackle? Did the player get any of the ball? We don't know, because you're in the stands. He really thought it was probably a red card. Seeing it, it took the standing leg. Your thoughts on that?
The Premier League is brutal. We're not going to get decisions going our way all the time. If that is overturned and given a red, I'm not sure whether Bournemouth fans will be very happy. And I think it's very rare that you ever see a red card for persistent fouling, isn't it? I mean, there probably was a couple of tackles in there which the referee might have turned around and given him a yellow for. But for whatever reason, I think that the referee just seemed pretty lenient throughout the game, to be honest. I think there was challenges from a lot of players who were, you know, that were potential yellow card challenges that were just sort of left away kind of thing. But I'm not completely sure here. But my understanding with VAR is that decision could only be overturned if it was going to be a straight red. Am I right?
I wouldn't have the expertise to know, would you, Cole? Because I have really not clued myself up on VAR, because it just seems like something that, despite there being existing obvious rules, never seems to be applied in an obvious way.
You can't give a second yellow, can you?
No, I don't think so. Honestly, I have no clue. Like, the whole VAR thing still, I've read up on it and it still confuses me. There's a lot of, I think, especially after this season, I think some things will change, because it seems like, I don't know, some of the additions and changes they made with VAR don't really make too much sense. Maybe they'll do a better job at explaining it. But I just wanted to touch on the whole Billings thing, because with refereeing, and this is the most annoying thing I find about professional football with refereeing, is, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, but I always find they referee the situation instead of like what actually happened, if that makes sense. Like, in my opinion, Billing should have been off. Like, how many times can you foul someone after getting a yellow, especially? Like, I can understand where maybe early on in matches where refs don't want to give a red card because they feel it's going to ruin the match. And I can understand the Premier League maybe not being okay with that because maybe it ruins their product. I'm sure it goes above that and beyond, but I don't know. I just feel like ref the situation as it is and don't gonna go off of, oh, I don't want to ruin this game, because either someone's going to get really hurt or something else is going to happen. And either way, I just, in my mind, I just don't understand what's going on, essentially. If that makes sense, I don't know.
No, it makes sense. I mean, you can't go around fouling all the time just for the referee to kind of go, oh, come on, mate, you know, just sort that out. Yeah, I mean, I feel that. And if I can just clarify the VAR thing as well, according to the Premier League website, the VAR will not intervene for an incident where a second yellow card leads to a red card unless the VAR believes the second yellow card should be upgraded to a red. So if anybody was confused about the VAR, that's probably why. But I mean,
it's still confusing, though, because when you're in the stadium, there was only one VAR call yesterday, and that was for a no penalty decision against Villa, really, when I seemed like Wesley kind of collapsed in the box.
Yeah.
But the referee puts his hand to his ear a lot, and you're like, is it VAR? Is it not? And you don't really know if a second look has been taken until it comes up on the screen. And by then, it's almost, you know, almost a foregone conclusion that something was happening anyway. But there's so many times when you're just like kind of left in the lurch. It's very good on TV because you have a commentator explaining you and they're obviously signaled to something. But, you know, the way the screens in the stadium work and the way you're focused on the referee while watching and he's putting his hand to his ear, you don't know what's going on. You have absolutely 100%. No clue.
But the system's good in the sense that they allow you to play on, though. And, you know, because of that, the game doesn't necessarily get interrupted unless it has to.
Maybe the focus on it being such a big thing when it isn't used all that often, is it?
It's been used pretty like often so far. Like, look at the Spurs Man City game yesterday. Like, that literally canceled out a win for Man City off of something that was a really weird rule, but I won't get into that. But no, I think it's just so foreign to everyone. It's going to take time. There's going to be aspects of VAR that people love, and there's going to be aspects that essentially people hate. And it's going to be one of those things also with football fans being fickle, is if it benefits your team, you're going to love it. And if it doesn't, essentially, you're going
to
hate it.
Yeah, you're definitely preconditioned to being pro or against VAR, because I've read an article about it, and I, the name of it escapes me, but it depends on how you view certain regulations in your own life and how you live your own life, is whether you are predetermined to accepting sporting events being played out by the athletes or regulations being enforced by a third party, which would be VAR consulting with the referee. But yeah, I guess it's a bit bigger, deeper conversation.
Yeah, we got deep there.
That's pretty philosophical, James.
But it's going to be, you know, it's going to be considered throughout the season. And Villa haven't really been on the end of anything major from it yet, so I guess we'll save it for another time. But I thought Billing should have been sent off, and I guess Eddie Howe was leaning towards it as well because he took him off at halftime.
Yeah,
and that's a definite sign of that guy was going, because you know, in the Championship you saw it get given for Villa a lot of times when, you know, a player would go in with a dicey challenge early on and get a yellow card, forget they had the yellow card, and do it again 10 minutes later and get sent off, and the game will be, the complexion of the game will be changed. And doesn't seem to have happened so far to benefit Villa in the Premier League as it did in the Championship. But again, we're only 180 minutes into the season. There's a lot to go. But I guess the story of the season continues. I wanted to speak about the fullback situation because Freddie Wilbert, he said in no uncertain terms that he's not injured and that he probably wants to be playing for Aston Villa. He hasn't featured so far in the season on the bench or even in the squad at all. Villa have went with Ahmed Al-Mohammadi, Neil Taylor at fullback. Danny, is this surprising to you at all? Where do you really lie with this situation?
No. What I want to know is, what have Ahmed Al-Mohammadi or Neil Taylor done to constitute being dropped? Al-Mohammadi, I thought, played well in both games. I know that this is a tired... This is a tired thing, but he does know Trezeguet. There was a couple of times where he managed to shift through balls to Trezeguet and absolutely do the defenders. And it happened quite often. And I thought that against a team like Bournemouth, you've got somebody like Al-Mohammadi who's strong going forward and is experienced in the Premier League. Why would you drop him? I mean, now you might have an excuse. Because Villa have lost two games, you might say, right, let's get Gilbert in. But just, you know, for the sake of defending Dean Smith here, Ezri Konsa can also play at right back, so that he's not going to see any reason to have another one on the bench.
I think what a lot of people overlook as well is Gilbert played a lot in preseason, and then they convert that to, why isn't he playing now? We also have to remember Al-Mohammadi was playing in, was it the AFCON? Or whatever it was.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so the time he got back was late and all that kind of stuff. And Danny made a good point about the Trezeguet link too, which works out perfectly in my opinion. Because if you're going to have someone that attacking up front, you need someone reliable to stay back. Gilbert wants to get forward, so essentially you don't want to play a winger and a right back that are going to be extremely high up the pitch. It leaves you vulnerable. We'll probably see different defenders come out in different situations this season because of who we signed. I think essentially we've got players that can play within different scenarios of different matches. So when we're playing the likes of Spurs or City or whoever, you're going to probably see more defensive center backs and more defensive wing backs and fullbacks. When we play, I don't know, probably like Norwich and other teams like that, you might may see Gilbert step in there. You may see Target step in there. I think Target's probably the one that didn't really make sense to me, I guess, to not start. But then again, Taylor hasn't done anything wrong, essentially, to drop him. I think a lot of people are just looking at the fees and saying, okay, we paid this and this for this guy. Why aren't we playing him? We can't base how this team is going to operate over fees, because if you look at fees, it's not going to get you anywhere. You could have a player that's £100 million and it turns out he's actually quite crap. So like, it's just one of those things that you have to base it on what fits your system. And at this moment, it seems like these two fullbacks fit our system.
And yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, James, like what I don't know about you, but I think, you know, the football we play is so intricate, isn't it? That if you take one of those gears out, the whole thing could fall apart. You've already seen that we're making errors, just slight errors. But you take out Taylor, you take out Al-Mohammadi, and suddenly you've got rid of, you know, most of the defense that took us up last season, and suddenly there's something not quite right with the chemistry.
It's not that Neil Taylor and Al-Mohammadi have done anything wrong at all. I just feel that the wings need a lot more help. And I think that left side, and with Al-Ghazi and Neil Taylor, that was a real problem, because when Jack Grealish was featuring in a triangle, you know, on that sort of passing triangle combination,
yeah,
nothing was working. Like, it was all out of time, out of sync. And then you switch Jack Grealish onto the other side and everything's working. And when John McGinn on that side, he had to really force the situation to get anything almost out of Taylor and Al-Ghazi. And again, it's not that they were doing anything wrong. It's that I do believe that these forward-thinking wingers and targeting Will Bear. And Al-Mohammadi is forward-thinking, so that's why that right side was better than that left side. Neil Taylor got into the box and missed two really, really good chances. And just think Target might be a better option on that left side because he does like a cross. And, you know, you've only got the crosses really coming in from that right side. Mm. So maybe a little bit of a change there could spark something. I'm not saying Will Bear and Target straight in, but maybe a staggered change. We can afford to rotate. And again, it's too early on to make these judgments, but I'm thinking there is a change coming there. Surely it's going to come at some point.
Yeah, there is. Look, I mean, Smith's not been complacent about it. He brought in Douglas Luiz ahead of Conor Hourihan this week. And, you know, that was something that might have surprised a couple of people, but it, you know, he gave him some time last week. We kind of saw him come on, fine. He'll probably feature a little bit more. Hotter's being brought off the bench a little bit more, slowly but surely. We might see him get on the pitch soon enough. He's already trusted Trezeguet and Wesley enough to be starting them as two of our main forwards. And I just think that, yeah, we need to be patient. I don't think Dean Smith's trying to freeze anybody out. I don't think he's trying to freeze Gilbert out by any means at all. But I just think we're probably going to have to just wait and see them kind of come in because the defense is so, so important in the Premier League that you can't afford to get anything wrong. We've got cup games coming up though, James. So I can definitely see them getting run outs in those.
Yeah, for sure. There's rotation coming up. I mean, even that striker, Keenan Davis, is probably going to be tried out at some point. Jonathan Codger comes back. There's cup games coming up. There's plenty of opportunity to rotate. What I did want to know off you both, before we move on to giving away our match balls and talking about the real positives of the game, is I wanted to know your opinions on the performance of Wesley, because there's a lot of dispute here. People think he didn't get involved enough. People say his hold-up play was well. Cole, I do want to know from you, what have you made of Wesley? Because he was a lot more of a focus against Bournemouth than he was against Tottenham. Impressed? What are your general thoughts?
He's done all right. I wouldn't say he's done anything super spectacular to really write home about. Against Spurs, obviously the McGinn goal, I thought he played a pretty good part in that, taking away a defender and giving McGinn that space. Yesterday, I think it just proved that maybe he needs to work on his hold-up play a little bit more. I feel like I said that last week, so maybe I'm a broken record. I don't know if any of you guys saw Stan Collymore's tweet last night saying that we need to get Heskey in to teach him how to hold up the ball and basically be a better forward. I thought that was kind of funny, but I hope that was a joke. But anyways, he's young, and a lot of people, again, look at the fee, so they assume he's going to be just like Benteke was when he stepped in and just fire in a bunch of goals. There's a lot of things that are different between them. There's a few things that are similar. I just think they're different strikers overall, and I think people looking at that fee, 22 million is actually pretty cheap for a striker at this current, I guess, time within currency for football players. So it is what it is there. Room to grow, still young. I think eventually he's going to get it right, and it's only going to benefit us long term, in my opinion.
Danny, how are you feeling about Wesley? I know you're fairly excited, I guess, when we signed him, but I guess realism probably sets in when you consider the task Villa have in front of them to break down these Premier League teams.
I don't know if he did much wrong. Mm-hmm. In all fairness, I thought when Wesley was signed that he's the kind of player, he's the kind of striker that sets other people up. I thought his general play and bringing Trezeguet into the game, bringing Grealish and whoever else was coming forward, I thought was fantastic. I thought whilst he was in the box as well, I thought he did make a good impression. I think he did bother the Bournemouth defence. I thought in general what the problem was that when a lot of the other players kind of got in, they didn't really they didn't really finish, but there were a few chances that Wesley had, which he did kind of create off his own back. And I think he showed that he is quite strong in that respect. And I do understand his hold up play needs to work, right? Needs to get better. But look how much of an improvement he made since the Spurs game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that it's a case of just getting used to the pace of the game, because there is serious talent there from what I've seen. And again, I can understand why people aren't incredibly excited about him right now, but I saw signs. I think there was definitely signs from him. I didn't think he had a bad game at all. If we're looking at players who should have done better, Wesley is not at the top of the list for it. I thought the finishing all round was just pretty poor.
Agreed.
But that's not necessarily from, you know, just Wesley.
A player that we know can do the business, guys, is Jack Grealish. Coming home, I saw a number of critiques of him. I say critiques, it's kind of bad faith criticism. I've wrote about this at length today, this morning. But three things I've picked out all involve swear words. And they're about Jack Grealish's performance. That apparently he's not cut out for the Premier League. But this is a player that the regular customers like to joke about and say, hang on a minute. This guy's not quite out for the Premier League. He's lost 20 games in a row, which is a ridiculous statistic because it goes across three or so years, and including time when Jack, you know, spent as a teenager on the bench for Aston Villa. So it's a completely redundant statistic that these, you know, squawker TalkSport are dragging out, putting a little social picture up there, and it's ridiculous. But yeah, this is a player that created six chances yesterday. He's a player that, you know, assisted Douglas Luiz and found space for him to score. It's a player who most of our attacking impetus ran through, and yet people don't think he's good enough for the Premier League based on two games. And I think, Cole, that's a bit odd considering the standards that we judge Grealish on and the standards that Grealish himself, that's the bar he set himself.
100%. That stat you mentioned absolutely drives me insane. I love it how it's like, oh, he's lost 20 games on the bounce. And then at the bottom, it says like, it's almost like they should put in small words. Like you'd see like a warranty thing that says like, oh, but he made six chances, the most this weekend. And you know what? He's trying his best. Like, I don't understand why they say it. I think it's just more content for them and it's lazy content. But no, getting on that. Yeah, he made, I think it said, six chances more than anyone else this weekend. And I think just that stat alone says what kind of player we have. It's going to start working out eventually. I think it's one of those things where we just have so many new bodies. It's a different situation than last year. Obviously, the quality is way higher. He's going to get it right. And you know what? He could have scored yesterday because there is one that he used on the inside mm-hmm. of the boot and it almost went in. Like, it was close. It was just on the other side of the post. It's going to start going in for him. He probably realistically won't maybe get as many points as he did last year, but he changes the game for us in so many different ways. Danny, how do you feel about it?
I thought our general play, again, was brilliant. And I think much of that was due to Grealish and due to John McGinn and also Trezeguet. But yeah, I thought Grealish did what you need to do in the Premier League. Win that ball from deep and confidently move it forward. Confidently, you know, try to, you know, impose yourself on the other team. I think I was frustrated before with Villa, you know, a few years ago, last time when we were in the Premier League, when a lot of our play sort of was about slowly kind of passing the ball sideways and kind of trying to break a team down. Whereas I think what you've seen in the Premier League, and I think certainly what you can tell from, you know, a lot of the mistakes that we've made is that it's such a physical league that you need somebody who's going to drive. And Grealish does that, you know, as does John McGinn. And I thought that he did that quite well against Bournemouth. Again, unlucky with that chance in the end. But so much of what we created came through him. I think there was moments, you know, by that left-hand side as well, you know, where if we're taking short corners or if we're taking throw-ins, Grealish seems to be doing all the work. Neil Taylor obviously, you know, gave it his best effort as well. But there was times where Grealish seemed to be the guy running that left-hand side, but the only guy doing it.
Cole, I just want to bring up what you said about Wesley, because I've just seen, you know, Stan Collymore's tweet.
Yeah.
Michael Owen, of course, the famous England striker.
Yeah, boring.
He has joined in and said, I'm astounded that football continues to be so far behind the times when it comes to specialist coaching. So plenty of people in the know agreeing with Stan Collymore, but I'm thinking you don't need Emil Heskey. Keenan Davis is right there and that guy can hold up the ball.
Exactly. We have, and like I've said before, we have players and we bought players in certain scenarios that they're going to fit certain moments of a game and won't fit other games, and they'll fit up like, you know what I mean? But anyways, they're going to fit certain scenarios. And Davis is the perfect example of someone you want to hold up the ball and move it. Wesley, you kind of want to do a bit of everything. I just find it hilarious how ex-pros and pundits act like they, just because they played, they know everything. Don't really know how Heskey comes into this. I don't know why they couldn't have thought about anyone else. That, not saying he's not qualified, but and I apologize for the dogs in the background. But yeah, it's just a funny stat, and I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, it's an awful thing, but yeah, it's again one of these things that happens in the Premier League where people kind of just drag up any old rubbish to kind of just make something to say about the teams they don't really know that much about. But yeah, I think I want to finish on that match now. I think we've spoken at length about it. We went over the points. There's probably some missing things we could have covered, maybe Al-Ghazi, Trezeguet, a bit more, but I think we've only got a limited time, really. So I wanted to get your match balls, the players that impress you the most. You've got one each. I'm going to take it last because I want to give you a chance to, you know, pick a guy before I step in. So Danny, I'm going to come to you first. I want your match ball for the player that impressed you the most against Bournemouth in Villa's home opener at Villa Park.
This is pretty difficult, in all fairness, because a lot of the guys in the team who deserve match balls were, you know, part of the errors. But I think because of the fact that we did play so well for much of the game, I want to give this match ball to Douglas Luiz. I know that he made that stupid error, that silly error earlier on. But we all do it. Every footballer has a lapse like that. But I thought mainly he worked his socks off for the whole game. I thought he did a good job of being the sole defensive midfielder and controlling that midfield. I did think that. One thing that did, I think, if anything, makes me feel excited or happy from that game, it's the fact that our midfield does look strong. Grealish, McGinn, and Douglas Luiz, I think the three of them will really be able to compete. And I want to give it to Douglas Luiz. He worked so hard to make up for his early error, and that goal that he scored was brilliant. Just great technique.
Well, Carl, I think we know who Danny's going to be sending his Valentine's card to next year. Who are you going for?
First of all, I'm going to apologize if you can hear a turkey in the background. It's not a turkey, it's a puppy, and he finally has his bark a little bit. second of all, I'm going to go for John McGinn. Statistically speaking, and just watching him, he by far had the best game. I think it was he had had six shots and three of them were on target. A lot of the things, kind of everything seems like it goes through him and Grealish, and more so yesterday, it seemed like it went through McGinn more than anything. So yeah, I'll have to give it to him. I guess if I was going to give it to anyone else, because I was kind of teetering, I was just going to give it to Wesley to make him feel better. But I think Danny has a man crush, so we're okay.
Come on.
He's a handsome man, I'm sure, but...
I was going to say, what is it? A man crush, man? I admire cultured central defensive midfielders or linchpins or deep lying playmakers or whatever you want to call them. Douglas Luiz.
Well, I haven't heard you say this about Conor Hourihan, mate, and he's a cultured defensive midfielder.
He's not Douglas Luiz. And also, you know, I think I'm living for the day we finally get our Carlos Sanchez replacement, and I think Douglas Luiz could be the one.
I mean, he already looks better than Carlos Sanchez. Not me being unfair. Carlos Sanchez had an eye for a decent pass, but he was a bit of a plodder, wasn't he? And Douglas Luiz isn't that. He's very box-to-box, very energetic, and didn't shy away, actually. I mean, he had every reason to kind of collapse and just fade away. Just not be involved, but he was there. He wanted to get back into it after the mistake, so fair play to him. I think you're right, Danny, and Cole, your choice is just as valid. But I'm going to go for Tyrone Mings. Difficult match. The narrative was all there after the big move from Bournemouth. Didn't look that bad, really, and really grew into the game. I mean, everything collapsed for like 20 minutes in. Yeah. 2-0 down. Defense has been battered. It shows his leadership, and he isn't going to be beaten lightly. I mean, two goals down, can't really reflect on him. It doesn't reflect on him at all, actually. I don't think he was really involved, apart from the deflection and maybe giving the run of Wilson off. But, you know, he didn't want to suffer it again. If Villa conceded a third, it wouldn't be him on him at all. But he wasn't going to let that happen. Tyrone Mings, everyone, is a class act, just like Bjørn Engel. So very thankful for him being at the back. And I think that fee that Villa have played looks just like a bit of business for us, really. I mean, Bournemouth are happy. Bournemouth are really happy with the money they've got off him, but I'm really happy with the player we've got, despite the money spent.
Funnily enough, neither of those errors were down to the defence, were they? Really?
Yeah. Not really, yeah. I mean, Douglas Luiz is part of the defence, but, you know, I guess that's up for debate.
I don't understand, by the way, why so many people were on Luiz's back by the end of the game. I mean, he made the error, but I haven't seen the same sort of anger at Grealish for his mistake last week, and also Heaton's mistake. I almost get the feeling that we might have somebody seriously underrated here from the fans' perspective. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see more from him, and I think things will get better as they go along. And I mean, I for one am very excited about watching Douglas Luiz, and I really want to continue, guys. I really want Douglas Luiz's rise to continue against Everton on Friday. So it's a quick turnaround, another match at Villa Park very soon. Marco Silva, Everton manager, they've won one game yesterday against Watford, Silva's former club. And of course, they opened their season with a draw against Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace. Very talented team, this lot are. Alex Iwobi on the bench. Keane from Juventus joins. Richarlison, Bernard. Plenty of talent in this team, guys. So, I mean, I'm a bit afraid. I don't know what you guys feel.
No, I'm not too afraid.
Really?
They play... Yeah, I think they... They're going to be in the same situation in some aspects. I think some of those players are going to still need time to embed. And once again, I apologize for the turkey. It's just one of those things where we can't go into any game, especially in the Premier League, even against the likes of someone like Man City or Liverpool, with fear. Because once we have to give them the respect, but at some point you just have to go there, put your head down and do your best. I think if we played how we did against Spurs, maybe make some earlier substitutions and maybe a few other tweaks, I think we can at least get a point here.
I don't think the talent, I mean, I know, I think if you take sort of like Harry Kane out of the equation, I don't think that the talent in that Everton team is far off Spurs. When you look at that midfield, you know, they've got Gomez, Bamin, and then, you know, those three behind the striker, Bernard, Sigurdsson, Richarlison. Sigurdsson, by the way, firstly, seems to always score against Villa. I'm not sure about statistics. He's one of those players that you just expect to score against us. Some sort of like benign free kick or something. Richarlison, he's always going to cause you trouble. And Bernard as well. You've got a lot of possession there. I think that's one thing. Well, I don't know if Villa are going to get an awful lot of the ball. I think that's the one thing that does worry me. And now also you look at it and you think those are two seriously talented wingers when I refer to Bernard and Richarlison. And as you say, Iwobi potentially could be starting. Are Neil Taylor and Al Mohammed going to be able to handle them? I mean, if we haven't given Gilbert and Target a run out yet, can we debut them against them? I think this is where it's going to be interesting.
You look at the wing attack in its entirety, guys. And, you know, you mentioned Bernard, Richarlison, Keane, Iwobi. Behind them, they've got Lucas Digne and Seamus Coleman, who are pretty tidy attackers in their own right. They're up there. So that's a lot on the wings to cope with. And I mean, you look at Almo and Taylor, and I think defensively sound enough, but you need the wingers evolved as well. Trezeguet and Alghazi, if they're starting, are going to just have to double up as auxiliary wing-backs there, because, you know, if Everton get the break on the wings, they've got some really, I wouldn't go to say elite, but that is solid Premier League talent really running at you. And the delivery, that they're proven. I mean, you don't have Leighton Baines anymore, who's probably got that sweet left foot. But Lucas Digne is, you know, and Seamus Coleman, they're no turkeys, guys. That's dangerous.
In which case, can we justify starting El Ghazi? Because he didn't seem to have an awful lot in his tank. And if we've got Coleman and Richarlison attacking Villa at that left-hand side, you know, potentially you've got to look at giving somebody else a run out. Maybe this is the game, by the way, maybe this is the game where you go Trezeguet on the left El Mohammadi on the right and Gilbert right back.
I was going to bring that up actually, and I really didn't want to get shouted down, but that is that isn't a bad but it's not a bad shout, is it? When you look at it like that, if you bring Gilbert in right back, that solves the problem. That solves everyone's debate. But Elmo isn't exactly untidy at right wing, and I mean people will be disappointed that he's starting in the Premier League, but he didn't look that bad in the last match out. So I think give him a chance. And if it's at the right, on the right flank, you've got a hard worker there.
Yeah, you do. I think El Mohammadi is one of the most underrated players that we've had, like, all throughout the whole promotion thing. He's never really been given that stardom. He's never really been given that, hero, that hero's standard, basically, that, like, you know, the likes of McGinn and Grealish and Mings have. But I think El Mohammadi's been such an important player for us. And when you look at some of the goals that we score, they're, you know, a lot of them come from El Mohammadi's crosses. I thought his crosses were tidy again, by the way, against Bournemouth. I thought his crosses were tidy against them too. I've got no problem with them on the right side.
Well, Cole, I wanted to know from you if our master plan, our dangerous master plan, as it were, would you think it goes any way to unlocking Everton?
I think it definitely could. I think in this game particularly, you look at their attack and especially their midfield, it's going to be interesting to see how counterattacking wing play really plays into it. But no, I think we can do it. There's no reason why we can't. It's going to be a tough ask, but at the end of the day, we can only do what we can do, right? So yeah, I'll leave it at that because this turkey's driving me insane.
I guess on a final note then, guys, I want to take some predictions because, you know, we're early into the season to devote a lot of time to previewing a game where everything is so up in the air for both teams as well, because, you know, Everton didn't kick off their season brilliantly against Crystal Palace, and we've stuttered so far. So, I devoting so much time to that preview doesn't really make sense. But I think focusing on the wings there is key, because Everton have a lot of talent there that Villa will have to deal with. And Villa's main issue is that fullback, again, a wing position, which everyone seems to want to rotate. But guys, I want some predictions for Villa versus Everton. And Danny, I'm going to come to you first. Scoreline, please.
All right. So off the back of getting last week's result correct, I am going to go with... This is at home, isn't it? Yes. Tell you what, let me stay away from the negativity, because I understand that it was quite negative for me to predict a 2-1 defeat. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I don't know if we're going to be able to score more than one. I mean, I'd like to think we can, but I haven't seen enough from our attacking play just yet. But I do think defensively we've been pretty good. I think defensively that is we've been strong. In all fairness, I think what we're going to have to hope to do is just kind of keep working hard all for the full 90 minutes. Unlike at Spurs, where we kind of collapsed near the end. If we can keep the ball for a lot of the game as the home team and try to make sure that we're not, you know, getting absolutely stuffed by Everton, I think we'll be okay.
I am going to go for a 1-0 Villa victory, and I think it'll be a last-minute goal. I think Villa will really want to tighten up. They don't want to be too exposed. They don't want to commit the naive mistakes again, so I think it'll be a bit more of a cautious approach. I mean, that does contradict kind of what Dean Smith wants to do. But so far, we've been kind of found out, and the mistakes have been capitalised on, so I think it'll be a close 1-0 Villa victory, and the home support should really play a big part. And Cole, for the last action of the podcast, can you please give me a scoreline prediction?
Yeah, sure. I'll ask the turkey too. let's see here. I will go with... I'm going to go with my first prediction. I'm going to go 1-1. Keep it simple and safe. I think we can definitely nick a goal. Most likely with their quality, they will as well. At this point, I think we just need a point, get some confidence back, kind of reset our season in some way and just kind of move on from there. Also, I don't know if he's part of 7500 to hold or not, but shout out to Trevor Hood because he made a chart of all our predictions, and that was pretty cool to see yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw that yesterday.
Oh, dude, we're in communication with Trevor all the time. Yeah. He's the executive producer. He always asks our predictions. He wants to make Excel charts. He you know, I do always get concerned about the changing the format of the podcast, because I know Trevor will, you know, make a spreadsheet and it would cause him more work. So I was surprised to see that he'd already actioned by bringing yourself into it. He'd already made that change. He's on the ball, Cole. Massive appreciation for Trevor Hood, who has done that for a few
seasons. That's amazing.
You know, the first time he did it, I think it was pen and paper.
Yeah.
He graduated to Excel last season, but the two seasons ago it was pen and paper. But, you know, brilliant. You love to see it, man. You love to see it. It's amazing work from him. And, you know, you couldn't be more happier, to be honest, because it does keep a track of all these things we talk about. Because, I mean, we should really do it ourselves. But Trevor's really stepped up to the plate and he's been a massive, massive help, especially when I'm getting laughed at for my predictions and he's putting them on paper because I haven't won. Well, you know, for ages.
Especially too, because I'm Tom Heaton, Danny is El Ghazi, and James is Hata. And I think Phil is Grealish, I believe. The picture's a little blurry, but yeah. So I don't know if that shows who are, like, how important we are to this podcast or what. But if that's the case, apparently Phil's the most important.
Yeah. I was about to say, Trevor, I mean, you need to speak up and tell us the reasons why you chose these pictures, because it can't just be random. There's got to be some philosophical deeper meaning.
James decided to out me on Twitter for looking like Hotter for whatever reason whenever he signed. I'm not quite sure if that's true or whether it's still true. But James seems to think I look a lot like him.
I think it was in the first issue when he was wearing his civvies, not the Villa gear.
Yeah.
He did look like you. Yeah.
So I look like Tom Heaton. Does that mean I have safe hands, or should I get a lot of slack for yesterday's performance? I'm not too sure.
I think your performance on the podcast has been a bit more sturdier than Tom Heaton's 10 minutes yesterday, Cole. So I think you're in the clear.
Okay. I appreciate it.
One final thing. You didn't ask the dog for the prediction. We needed the prediction from the dog.
Yeah, he kind of sent the paper under the door, and he's going to go with a ridiculous 3-1 Villa because he's like 4 months old and he doesn't know what he's doing. Enough. So, yeah, he's going to go 4-1.
Well, I predicted 4-0 last time, Cole, so I don't really know what I'm doing as well. It'll turn out. But, both of you, thank you so much for joining me. The second podcast of the season, I think it's just went just as well as the first. I'm joining a new format, and I hope everyone else at home is as well. If you'd like to leave a review, I think we'd all appreciate it. The podcast has changed a lot since we had reviews from 2015 when I wasn't even on it. So the main reviews that you see on Apple Podcasts don't. They're nothing to do with the show anymore, because it doesn't have any American voices on because Cole is Canadian. So it reflects the old, extremely old hosts, Jack Grimsey and Robert Lintott. Any reviews you can give to kind of update the show, give people a clearer picture of what it's about now. It's a worldwide Villa podcast. Any reviews would be appreciated. You can follow Cole at Talk Aston Villa. You can follow Danny at Riser Journo. I'm Jamie Rushton. All together, at 7,500 to Hot, and we'll catch you hopefully this time when Villa pick up their first point to the season after beating Everton. Fingers crossed. We'll see you next Sunday. Goodbye and up the Villa.